business of anything but facts. I'm not in the business of tall tales and bedtime stories. What you will hear are true facts, real evidence, and eyewitness accounts of everything I discuss. This is real.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile, found sometime last week, has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection.
The strange events at Roswell. Everybody has heard in some capacity of the strange events at Roswell in the summer of 1947. The truth as to what actually happened, however, has been muddied over time by Hollywood, literature, and hearsay. With over 30 witnesses to the event that have come forward, the official narrative also varies slightly. From what I can decipher, these are the most accurate and truest records of the events in Roswell, New Mexico, in July of 1947. At this time in the late 40s, only some 2 years after the end of the Second World War, paranoia was at a high. The nation was heading into the Cold War with Russia, and a number of new weapons were being tested by the United States military. From nuclear and hydrogen bombs, to the many weapons and rocketry that was obtained through Operation Paperclip. There was also a fear that Russia was developing its own weapons and aircraft, and initially unidentified aircraft, it was thought, might be Russian in origin. So there really was a focus on reporting and investigating every single sighting that was made of unidentified aircraft. In late June of 47, radar at Roswell, White Sands, and Albuquerque had begun tracking unidentified flying objects over the course of several nights. The aircraft were noted to be traveling at speeds far greater than any known aircraft at that time, and maneuvering in ways that was impossible by conventional and known aircraft standards. In this week alone, sightings of unknown aircraft jumped a whopping 240% higher than average. On July 2nd at 9 p.m, Mr. and Mrs. Dan Wilmot reported a sighting of a saucer-shaped craft slow to a hover over their house in Hageman, New Mexico. This was before it accelerated at an impossible speed and out of sight in an instant. 1 p.m. on July the 3rd in Portland, Oregon, local police and multiple members of the public report seeing four UFOs flying in formation in a southeasterly direction, while 3 hours later, several cars full of people reported seeing a similar formation of flying discs with the addition of a fifth vehicle in Redmond, Oregon. United Airlines Captain E.J. Smith and his co-pilot report witnessing in mid-flight a group of nine flying discs in a two-row formation flying in a southerly direction over Grand Junction, Colorado. What the hell was going on over the western United States at this time? Incidentally, on July the 1st, there was a terrible thunderstorm in the area around Corona and Roswell. During the storm, five separate individuals all reported seeing a huge white orb with a bright red chemtrail emerge from the storm clouds heading towards the ground. This was followed by a huge explosion that could be heard over the thunder. This was reported by off-duty Corporal E.L. Piles, Bill Woody and his teenage son, Mother Superior Mary Bernadette and Sister Capistrano, all from different vantage points. On July the 1st, 1947, William Mac Brazel, a foreman working the Foster Ranch, and ranch hand D. Proctor, discovered clusters of metallic debris scattered over 3/4 of a mile across the fields they were working, herding sheep, around 30 miles south of Corona, New Mexico. For your information, by the way, most reports states it was near Roswell that this incident happened, but that is incorrect. It was actually closer to Corona, New Mexico. In the middle of the debris field was a 500-foot gouge, 10 feet wide, that had been so hot on impact that the sand in the impact gouge had crystallized into glass. Upon discovering the debris, Brazel noticed that the sheep became instantly fearful and would not go near, let alone cross the debris. Brazel noted at the time that the pieces of what appeared to be thin strips of aluminum foil were in chunks of around 6 inches by 6 inches in size and were very thin, smooth, and light. He noted that the pieces could not be cut, scratched, bent, or burned, regardless of the amount of force being used. There were also numerous metallic beams around 20 to 30 inches in length and around an inch thick that, when picked up, seemed to have no weight to them at all. They were again extremely strong and also bore dark purple symbols and hieroglyphics down the length of the beams, a kind Brazel had never seen before. The rancher took some of the debris home to show his family that night. Worth mentioning at this point is that D. Proctor, who discovered the debris with Mac Brazel, would never ever go on to discuss what he saw that week in and around Roswell, New Mexico. Friends and family who were close to D stated that he would leave the room if the subject ever came up, and whenever asked about what happened, his face would always fill with fear, and he was unable to comment from sheer terror. A week later, on or around July the 6th, Mac Brazell had heard reports of flying discs being spotted in the area. So he reported the wreckage first to Sheriff Wilcox in the town of Roswell, who then reported it to Major Jesse Marcel, an intelligence officer at the nearby Roswell Army Airfield. Major Marcel and Army Intelligence Officer Sheridan Cavite accompanied Mac Brazell to the location of the debris and gathered up as much as they could, taking it back to Roswell Army Airfield. By this point, word had gotten around town in Roswell that a flying saucer had crashed, and a number of locals also turned up to the crash site to help with the cleanup and see the debris for themselves. It's worth noting that there were almost 30 witnesses to the crash site, and all recall the strange qualities the metal had. What became known to the witnesses as memory metal would be a consistent descriptive from every witness in the debris. Also worth noting is that every single one of those 30 witnesses, including children, all had their lives threatened by military employees over the coming weeks. Later that first night, Sheridan Cavite took a number of pieces of the debris home and woke his wife and son to show them what he had. One piece of aluminum foil in particular, Cavite noted, he was able to scrunch up into a ball, only to have it open back up flat and seamless in front of their eyes. This was the memory metal in action. The next day, Colonel Blanchard, the commanding officer at Roswell Airfield, upon examining the debris, ordered the base's press officer, Walter Hout, to issue a press release stating that they had captured a flying saucer. Colonel Blanchard then contacted General Roger M. Ramey at the Fort Worth airfield, who requested that some of the debris be sent to him for further inspection. Upon receiving the debris, General Ramey ordered another press release to be issued, this time stating that the debris was in fact a crashed weather balloon. At the press conference, items of wood, foil and rubber were shown to the media, and as such, the story disappeared from the headlines after just 2 days. Major Marcel noted at this meeting he brought in some of the metal debris to show the general, who then invited him into another room to look at a map of New Mexico so that Major Marcel could identify where the debris was found. Major Marcel stated that when he walked back into the room, the debris had been switched with bits of wood and foil, obvious weather balloon elements. The local Roswell radio station, KGFL, also contacted Mac Brazell the next day to conduct an interview about what he had found. During the interview, Brazell stated the following: "And the stench from the bodies is disgusting." An interview they were later prevented from airing due to national security reasons after being contacted by the FCC once news broke that bodies had been discovered. That's right, bodies had been discovered, 5 of them, and only 4 were dead. These bodies were not, I repeat, not human, or indeed terrestrial in origin. On July the 8th, Glenn Dennis, a mortician at Ballard Funeral Home in Roswell, received a number of telephone calls from Roswell Airfield, asking about the availability of 5 small, child-sized caskets, specific chemicals that should be used in preserving bodies that have been exposed to the elements, and what effect said chemicals would have on the blood and organs of deceased bodies. The following eyewitness account has been quoted by no less than 20 people who witnessed the bodies. The bodies discovered were classic grey humanoid in appearance, about 3 feet tall, weighing about 40 pounds, with large heads, with dark oval eyes set wide apart, a small, barely visible nose, and a small mouth with no visible lips. The skin was light grey and covered with a light peach fuzz. The fingers on each hand were long, twice the length of a human male finger, and they appeared not to have any sexual organs. 5 bodies were found, 4 deceased and 1 alive, albeit barely. Dr. Lejeune Foster, who is a spinal cord specialist and former World War II undercover FBI agent, was brought in by the military to study the nervous systems of the creatures. The experience, she stated, left her very shaken, and she was threatened with loss of her medical license and disappearance if she spoke of what went on. Those who knew Dr. Foster stated that she was left nervous for many years after and was extremely reluctant to speak of what happened that day. Dr. Foster conducted 4 autopsies and briefly came into contact with a conscious being who observed her but made no attempt at contact. After collection and cleanup, all debris was later shipped to Dayton, Ohio at Wright Field, the home of the captured Foreign Technology Unit, as confirmed by direct eyewitness Colonel Philip J. Corso. Worth mentioning too is that Roswell Army Airfield was home to the 509th Bomb Squadron, the most advanced air squadron on Earth at the time. They were the responsible ones for dropping the 2 nuclear bombs on Japan at the end of the Second World War. On July 9th, Mac Brazell was taken by military police to the offices of the Daily Tribune, where he was told to retract his first statement and issue a new one, stating that what he had actually seen was wooden sticks, tin foil, and what appeared to be a weather balloon. Brazell complied. Following this, Mac Brazell was placed under arrest and held at Roswell Airfield for over a week, and heavily interrogated by Sheriff Wilcox and the U.S. Army Air Force, following which he was released, resigned from the Foster Ranch, bought a brand new truck, a farm, and a business. He moved him and his family from his one-room house with no electricity or running water, and like many others, Brazell would not speak about the events of that summer ever again. Sheriff Wilcox, who had to deliver a lot of the death threats personally and act as a terrorizing muscle on behalf, or sometimes with, the U.S. Army Air Force agents, never ran for sheriff again, and his family said the events at Roswell devastated him, and he was never the same person. A confident, outspoken and charming man, he was reduced to solitude and silence. Never would he allow any comment or conversation about the military or government in his presence following the events at Roswell. After several weeks had passed, the events at Roswell became that of legend and history. Those involved were all scared and threatened into never speaking of it again, and the military press releases put the rumor mill to bed. It was all but forgotten. Until. In 1978, momentum began to gain regarding the research that had been started by several highly acclaimed and identified flying object researchers. Stanton T. Friedman, William Moore, Carl T. Flock, David D. Randall, and Donald R. Schmidt were all closing in fast on an event they had uncovered in 1947 that involved a crashed extraterrestrial vehicle, the recovery of the extraterrestrial vehicle and life, and a massive government cover-up. Stanton Friedman tracked down Major Marcel in 1978, and the story went global once again. The witnesses involved came forward, and the truth seeped out. Bear in mind, this was before MJ-12, but once news of that broke, it only confirmed what the researchers were saying. The United States military and government had recovered alien spacecraft, both dead and alive extraterrestrial entities, and conducted a massive cover-up that still went on to this day. Further, Roswell wasn't the only incident. In Dwight D. Eisenhower's departing speech as president in 1961, he warned the world to beware of the military-industrial complex. We as the world did not take heed of his advice. Roswell was the start of the complex. In 1994, the General Accounting Office launched an inquiry into Roswell after media and hype on the subject had reached fever pitch. They directed the Office of the United States Secretary of the Air Force to conduct an internal investigation. The conclusion that they first released to the public in 1994 was that there was indeed a cover-up at Roswell, that the Roswell crash was the result of Project Mogul. Project Mogul was an Air Force project where they launched high-altitude balloons with microphones attached to listen out for Soviet tests of nuclear weapons. However, a newspaper article on July 15, 1947 in New York revealed the existence of Project Mogul even then and explained in its entirety what it planned to do. Further, there was zero top-secret paperwork records in regards to its existence in the National Archives. So, if it was general knowledge and in the public domain, and zero classified documents exist in relation to it, why was there a cover-up? The US government in 1997 then released a second statement to further evidence what had happened in Roswell in 1947. They said the alien bodies that were found at the crash site in Roswell were actually test dummies used in Operation High Dive, an Air Force project set up to test high-altitude parachutes. The test dummies used, however, were 6 foot tall and weighed around 170 pounds, a little different to the 3 foot creatures who weighed 40 pounds that were actually recovered. Further, Operation High Dive didn't begin until 1953. It's documented by the same government. For the records, Major Marcel died on June 24, 1986. He took the secrets of Roswell to his grave and never ever went back on his word, sticking to the same story over the years. What do you think happened at Roswell? Do you think that extraterrestrials crashed on Earth and their bodies and craft were recovered? Do you think it's all baloney? I tried only to present facts here and not speculation or story. I haven't gone into the hearsay and unsubstantiated side stories of Roswell, although they are out there if you want to read more. I'm personally a believer in UFO phenomenon, and I do believe something not of this world crashed in Roswell that day in 1947. I don't doubt for a second that the US government would recover and utilize any technology and knowledge that they could, especially in the climate of the Cold War. Eventually, I will cover further topics linked to this, such as the MJ-12 documents, the military-industrial complex, black ops, top-secret bases, and many, many more. I'd love to hear your feedback, though. Either drop me a message through the website or via our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram accounts. All links for these are on the website. Until next week, thanks for listening. Please, please subscribe. And remember, stand firm as you enter the darkest night.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.